February 15th, 2011. Here's a Watt from Pedro's show. Okay. Thank you.
136.2.
From Pedro Show on another Tuesday. Looks like rain's coming, brother man.
Yeah, it does.
It does, yeah.
Gray.
Ah, you heard words from our guest.
Yeah.
That's right. That is me.
Danny Frankel.
I walked here from East Hollywood. No, that's fiction. No, I drove and
Well, you're all cannonball now. There
you go. Now the rain is looking good. It's good for the trees, good for the air.
Yeah.
It's a good
Just
song.
Just not too much, right?
Right.
You know, deluge and mudslide. East Hollywood get flushed away.
Oh, yeah. What would they do?
Started the show off with John Coltrane doing Blues to Elvin, Take Three. It's an alternate.
Yeah.
You can hear some spiel there at the end. And then we heard Gypsy Cabster, Mr. Danny Frank, on his latest release
cool.
with
right.
Mr. Nels Klein. Huh? Larry Golding.
Yeah.
The Interplanetary Note Beat Conference.
That's it.
Yeah. Heavy and stuff. What do you want to tell me about that?
Okay, you can get it on CD Baby, and also this good friend of mine, Husky, has a digital, what is it called? Like a digital record company, I guess it's called. and it's called groundlift.org, and you can get it on that too. And let me see.
Well, how'd the project come apart? About, not apart, but about.
That's right.
How?
Oh, because I was on this really long tour, and at the end of the tour book, you know, where all those blank pages are, yeah. I just like write different ideas, like not really write music, but different ideas, like an image, like that, like it's the year 1967. There's a like three or four of us driving in a car, and it's in Israel, and just like a weird scene, you know. Then that became
67.
You got it.
Like the Six Days War.
You got in the Summer of Love.
Oh, okay.
Wait, what did you just say?
The Six Days War was it? Was that 67? It was around there.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You driving around.
Whoa.
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong in the dates.
But and then that became the tune you just played.
Okay.
And so then let me see. So after this tour, luckily Nels and Larry were available for a few days at my friend's studio and got together and played. And
what to realize these things in the blank pages.
Indeed, yeah, and. Those guys are so great. They're great listeners, and they made everything just sound so cool and fun. And I always wanted a record like that. You know, it's kind of unpretentious, but it's like out there at the same time. You know, so it's like for the people. It's not like some elite thing where no one knows.
Oh yeah.
You know what's going on. And then
you want to climb up into your own belly butt, choke to death on the lid. Speaking of Middle East, we should say a big hooray to Egypt.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Wow.
Wow, can you believe? And then
that's pretty great.
A lot of the lands over there.
Yeah,
right
yeah.
Now,
yeah
right?
It's definitely, yeah, it's like this domino effect now.
Yeah.
Domino.
Yeah.
Yeah, remember?
We've also said domino,
all
too.
All those years
in
school
times,
but with domino effect, it was always a bad thing. Now it can be a good
there
thing.
It is. Yeah. Man, that was exciting, like watching all those people in the center of town.
Can we talk about how you got into music? How old were you?
Let me see. How old was that? It was like around elementary school, and
whereabout?
In Silver Spring, Maryland, which is around 3 miles away from Washington D.C., where I later moved to, like after high school, because it was great there. A lot of people from different countries were there. All these museums, parks, really cool music.
What happened in grade school in Silver Spring?
These great jazz players were out, like Gene Krupa. My father took me to this little joint in downtown D.C., and I saw him. And then the Beatles, of course, and Ed Sullivan, and then surf bands, then a lot of the jazz stuff. I was really mesmerized when there'd be a jazz group, and they'd play, like a quote-unquote rock tune, but the beat, you know, the backbeat would be displaced. You know, it wouldn't be on 2 and 4 all the time. It'd kind of just shift around. You're like, wow, this is really great. And then, maybe it was Moses Allison was the guy they heard do that. But mostly it was the Beatles and the whole English invasion thing and the surf music.
In grade school, you said, I want to play drums?
Yeah, and my brother was playing guitar. And
I was already doing that.
He was, we both kind of started on the same time, and we both practice at the same time, but not listen to each other.
That technique, the concept. Kind of terrible.
So, but it was great. You know,
you got a drum set, huh? I want a drum set.
Yeah, it started with a snare drum, and then there's this woman named Vera Allen. I still remember her name. She'd walk up and down the street, and she would teach people different instruments. And then what she would do?
You were out there with the snare drum?
Yeah, she would appear, then she'd give me a book and a stamp. God, this is like old stuff. And the stamp to put in the book. And then when I get enough, I'd get... like my brother would be able to get a guitar string. That's really wacky, right?
Okay.
And then, or me drumsticks. Then it built up to the drum kit.
Yeah.
And then.
But you started with the snare.
Yeah. And then, then my father came home from work. This is great. And he said, if you want to learn how to play drums, a friend of mine at work said you have to play bongos first. And this was like back then, you know, and I've always been into that a lot.
So, did the bongos come before the snare?
No, a little bit after. And And then later I started like rediscovering and searching the great bongo stuff, like the bongos in the soundtrack to Touch of Evil.
Yeah.
The great, and then sure. I Want to Live, you know, with Susan Hayward. And man, all the really, even and the like the rock stuff, or For Your Love, the Yardbirds were the bongos.
Yeah.
That cool thing at the end where he slows down.
Mission Impossible, there was all the
So
yeah, little drama, little
definitely a dramatic thing.
And are you playing in the school band at this time?
I was, but I didn't. I think I wasn't. I don't know what the word is, like aggressive enough or something. So I kind of stand back and act funny. You know, I wouldn't say like, okay, man, I want to take the loudest part or something.
Right.
I was
well,
kind of in the back.
Drummers.
Yeah, there would be like three or four. Then eventually.
Were you in the marching band?
I was, yeah. I think it didn't work out that great. I remember I have this memory of a teacher in like a loudspeaker yelling, "Danny Franco, you look horrible." It was kind of just fucked up. So what was great?
The skill of being a teacher, you know.
That's right. Yeah.
Finding the right words to inspire.
Yeah, you have to have the right.
That technique. I had a music teacher. He told me,
you
try hard, but you ain't got it, man. Why you stop wasting your time and my time? Our time. He looked at the class. Right. Our time.
Ah.
I was like, oh, man.
God, that's such a classic thing. No.
Make my bow here. Take my bow.
Thank you.
Mr. Luna. His name was Mr. Luna.
Really?
But I've always wanted to visit him.
And
do what? Just say, hey, guess what I do for a living? So I never took another music class after that. All I learned about music was with D. Boone. And,
Wow, yeah, there you go.
But it kind of crippled me. It was seventh grade.
Oh, yeah?
So I was like 12, yeah.
Here, right, in
it was, up the road a little. They don't call it Pied Run anymore, but Dotson, right? Mm-hmm. It was a junior high.
But that's what
they gave me the clarinet. I wanted to do saxophone with 30 other guys. They ran out, so they gave me a clarinet. And for 10 weeks, I tried on the licorice stick,
Right.
And he read me that inspiring... well-chosen words, uplifters.
Good grief.
To send me right up and out of the classroom.
But
anyway, I was helping everyone, right? Because I was wasting time.
But that's what it took to...
I had to liberate them from my hell.
Yeah. Then you met your people, right? And that was me too. That's when it got good. That's what this... Paul Motion, who I study with, I was his only student. He said to me, said, just get together with your friends, and play that way. And
that's how
that's the way to go.
Thank you, Paul.
Yeah.
But you were still in the school thing.
Yeah, I was. Yeah.
But you were playing at home with your brother. Did you guys make a band?
We had a band, and we played at different youth centers around town. Oh, wait, I just remember one thing. At one time in the school band, a friend of mine that I met there, he took me to the classroom early, and get this, he played me Spiritual Unity, the Albert Eiler record, and the teacher came in, and he goes, hey, Dan, seems like you're getting spiritually united. And he was like a real straight guy. He looked like Mr. Mitchell from Dennis the Menace.
But he knew,
yeah. And during the class, I thought he was this guy that was
Square
John. Yeah.
Wow.
But and then
looks
later,
can
yeah,
be,
my brother
deceiving.
Yeah, that was pretty wild.
And that's a trip to get in high school somebody. I didn't hear
definitely,
about that
yeah,
stuff
back
till I met punk people.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I didn't know anybody at school.
I really loved how this stuff related, like hardcore punk with like avant-garde jazz.
That's where I learned all about it. Petty Bone
jazz.
Played me Coltrane.
Did he?
First time. Yeah,
wow,
I did.
So
I grew up in Navy Housing and here at Pedro High and Dotson. Nobody ever talked about it. The big bands in those days was Grand Funk.
All right, Mark Don and Mel.
Yeah. And Jay Giles.
Jay Giles. Funny. So it's like a right. That's
so like that, and that's it. In those
blues,
days,
funk.
The 70s, early 70s.
Yeah.
At least everyone I knew. About the most wild would be Jimmy. And Jimmy was wild. Jimmy had
a yeah, that was
but
good.
But
that
was the
that
most.
Was
no one knew about these other musics at all.
Oh, right.
You know.
The more obscure
they didn't
stuff.
Go back. You'd only go back like 5 years maximum.
Right.
Yeah. It was kind of weird.
I was always interested.
I tell people
like,
about that. My 70s things, it was kind of closed-minded.
Yeah. Like no one was interested like in who, like how someone got influenced.
Yeah.
Like where they...
backwards.
Yeah. Like learn their stuff from.
I remember reading in interviews, some guys, especially the England guys, would always acknowledge blues guys.
That's so right.
I had one hint that rock came from some of the blues, but I didn't know the jazz angle at all. Zero. Just didn't know.
The jazz thing.
Just fucking didn't know. And it was... So anyway, okay, you hear some Eiler. You haven't made a band yet, though.
Well, my brother and I had casually, we had like a garage. We did have a garage
band,
rock.
Right.
Yeah, we'd play out.
They ain't doing gigs.
No, we played a little bit at these youth centers, like in Bethesda, Maryland, Wheaton, Maryland, a few times in town, Washington, D.C. One time we saw...
would they be like dances?
Or? Yeah, the really young people. Wow, I mean, there must be like junior high school people. Like, dancing is kind of funny.
So were you writing tunes yet?
No, it was all cover...
Copying off records.
And like the top 40 stuff.
I didn't write any song. I wrote one song before
Did
punk.
You?
Only one song before punk. It was called, I've told this on the show about 100 times, it was called Mr. Bass, King of Outer Space.
Right.
And it was about playing this bass solo and blowing everybody off the stage. I can't remember how it goes, but it was obviously reflecting my insecurities about my hierarchy and the pyramid of rock.
The field, yeah. Did you ever want to play guitar instead of bass?
No.
Yeah?
At first I thought bass was a guitar. I didn't know the strings were bigger because the arena rock, I'd never been to a club till punk. So everything was very far away.
Wow.
So I didn't really know.
You never been to a club till punk?
I hadn't been to a club. I've been to Long Beach Arena, the Forum, Long Beach Auditorium, Santa Monica.
Fender's City. Ballroom, right. Wasn't
that
a place?
Not even that.
Yeah.
Nothing that small. So I was never close to the bands. I never saw them up close.
Right.
And you really didn't have like the shit art centers and shit. There was pawn shops, and in fact that's where we got our first guitars, and that's why I did at first was play a guitar with just four strings.
Mm-hmm.
About what time did you get all the trap kit together?
That was
you were adding a piece at a time?
Hell yes.
Like that Johnny Cash song, One Part of a Time.
Remember
that Johnny Cash song? He's stealing shit from
now
car.
I do.
He's going to put together a car with all the parts he's kiping from the factory.
It's pretty wacky.
And it's called One Piece at a Time.
Yeah.
Anyway, you put together traps at one piece.
Yeah, I think it was like the end of junior high school or something. Yeah,
okay.
That seems right.
You're doing the sock ops and shit or whatever, the little junior high dances, but you're not...
Yeah, and playing in the neighborhood.
Were you the older brother or the younger brother?
The younger brother.
Okay, so you were taking the head slaps.
That's right.
I know from the meat puppet, the Kirkwood. In fact, I got called today. The guy's writing a book on the meat puppets.
He wanted to get some info about the Kirkwood brother dynamics.
I said, well... Kurt was the older one, so I think he kind of played the older brother role. And Chris was a younger one, so I think he ended up playing the younger brother role.
Yeah. It's like a TV show.
Yeah. What was that, Wally and Beef?
Yeah, probably.
There's a lot of backhanded in that show. There should have been for Eddie.
Man.
Okay, so... Oh, yeah, we should explain to the listeners. What time period is this?
Oh, what year? This would be coming on to, like, early 70s.
Okay.
It's a great time, you know, like, in D.C., you know, with the whole culture thing, like, music, you know, and people standing up for themselves and art. And hell, yeah.
So, do you take it further? Obviously, you did. So how?
Yeah, you know, I just kept on playing. What happened? I played in a lot of different groups.
You started playing with people besides your brother?
With other people, yeah.
In high school?
Yeah. That was great. Some of the, like, the Motown stuff and rock stuff. Then I went to school in Rhode Island for 1 year, and then at Brown University in Providence.
Yeah.
Keith Sierra Quartet was playing with Paul Motion. I was always been a fan of his, And because I like when he would play rock and kind of play loose, you know. And,
yeah.
And I saw him on TV with Arlo Guthrie, and he played Woodstock with him. And just the way we could play, really great. So I walked up to him after the show, and I said, "Do you teach?" And he goes, "No, not really, but if you're ever in New York, look me up." You know, so I did that. So for like 2 years, I'd take a bus or a train from Rhode Island or from D.C. when I moved back to D.C. after school, and we'd study with him. It was great. It was like really conceptual. Like he would give me piano music and tell me to read. To play the rhythm of that, and tell me to think of colors. You know, it's very conceptual,
you know,
very
Jones,
cool.
Oh, Different Drummer documentary?
Oh, yeah, I saw that a long time ago,
well,
yeah.
He talks about colors when he's
That's
drumming.
That's great, yeah.
Different drums, different cymbals are different colors.
Yeah, yeah.
Painting.
You're a fan of Elvin, right?
Yeah, big time.
Yeah, me too. Did you get to see him?
I've seen him many times.
I saw him many times.
Catalina, last time was at the bakery. And we saw Charlie Watts there with Les McCann. Charlie had like 3 overcoats on.
He had what?
Like 3 overcoats on.
He did? Yeah, I met him through Jim Keltner, and he had this really funny handshake. My wife can do it really well. It's like this loose fish kind of thing. It was great. Charlie Watts.
Charlie Watts.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was watching, and Elvin was, you know, Les was yelling at him, and she'd, "Come on, you motherfucker." And
what?
Like,
well, now, Elvin oh, Jones yeah. is playing with Les McCann?
No. Les is in the crowd with Charlie.
Okay. Yeah, I never heard of him.
Heckling him.
Heckling
Charlie
him.
Wasn't heckling, but Les was.
Right.
He was in a chair.
Yeah.
Maybe stroke or something.
Oh, okay, yeah. Too much.
I don't know, maybe 15 times. I saw him so much because he lived in Nagasaki, and so his first gigs would be here. Jazz Machine.
We're like, everyone would wear the t-shirts, right?
Not him, though. But all his young guys would have the iron on, and you could tell it was the first day, it'd be all hard.
Oh, like the decal.
Yeah.
That's great.
Okay, so after this tutelage. New York City tutelage.
Yeah, that was great. You know, I like to seek out other people too, like the principal timpanist with the National Symphony. I studied with him, then out here with different people, with people from different.
Well, what brought you out here?
I was in a band in D.C. It was called the Urban Verbs, and there's kind of there's a Talking Heads connection. The drummer of the Talking Heads.
Well, Rhode Island.
That's where they're from, or they went to Brown University. Almost all of them, yeah, except for Jerry. But I mean, the drummer, Chris, his younger brother is Roddy France, who's the singer of the band that I was in, the Urban Verbs.
Ah.
And it sounded similar, but we had our own thing also, and that was great. And we played a lot. We played at CBGB's like in '78. You know, when you can really feel there's something in the air. We got to see a lot of those bands back then, like Pierre Ubu. Like early B-52s. It was totally cool.
Did you see Boydoids? Did you see Richard Hell?
I did, yeah. Richard Hell and Boydoids, yeah. They were my favorite. I like television a lot, but something about the Boydoids, how primitive and angry
Mark
and
Bell
weird they were.
Mark Bell at the time, who turned into Marky Ramone.
Exactly, yeah. He used to be in a band called Dust. I think he was like a hard rock kind of guy. He was good for
Dust
that band.
Dust. Well, I guess it depends what time. But late 70s for sure, because that's when I was hitting on that shit. No, we did it for like a month. We didn't know what it was. They told us it was Mota.
Right.
Like concentrated.
Yeah.
It was something like black ass. The elephant tranquilizer.
Yeah,
it was bullshit. In fact, when I saw Talking Heads in 77, they played the Whiskey. And I was I slid in the mud all over my face. I couldn't even feel the shit. And I walk in the club, I'm screaming and hollering. And I'm like, God, that was embarrassing. That was just shameful.
Man.
Yeah.
Angel Dust, Gil Scott Heron tune.
Whack. Not happening.
Good grief.
We stopped really quick. About a month or 2 months.
Man, where'd you get it?
Here, somebody.
Here in
was
this,
an aluminum
in
foil.
This apartment?
Was but not here, not in the love grotto. Brother man is not dusted. He's not all shermed up. You know where you'd smell the sherm is like at the. I remember I saw it. It was P Funk and Barquets and Lakeside, and there was a lot of that
oh my
smell.
God. Wow. I saw him at the Apollo once.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the during the time of the Freak of the Week and the Mothership.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
It was with that band there, Verbs. We were in a limousine, and no one knew where we wanted to go or anything. So one person said, "Hey, I heard that Parliament Funkadelic's at the Apollo." So we went there. It was incredible.
Bitchin'. Yeah, riding around a limousine.
It's funny. Yeah, no one knew where to.
So
to do.
Let's play some music, and then we'll pick up.
Great.
On your tale of yore.
Okay, yore.
I'm looking
Watt from Pedro show. You just heard Acceleration by the Urban Verbs.
Indeed.
And he's been just talking about it. Before that, we had Cigarette and Water.
What was it?
Cigarette and Water. It's a song by a band called Mila and the Geeks.
Oh,
Tokyo
cool.
Tokyo band.
Where are they from?
Tokyo.
Oh, wild.
And then we heard Your Confusion, My Illusion by Aero Scream. And they're from Sapporo, Hokkaido. Oh. And we started off with the Texas band, Austin band, called Many Birthdays and You and Me. But they lived some years in Osaka.
Oh, wow.
So that's a connection there.
Indeed.
So, yeah, the Urban Verbs, you're playing in the big city with these guys.
Yeah.
Playing CBs and part of that scene.
Yeah, definitely.
What happened?
A lot of those places. Yeah, Peppermint Lounge. Oh, no.
Peppermint Lounge.
Peppermint Lounge, yeah, Haraz. Did you?
Yeah.
Wow, cool. And I was going to say that the guy who signed us also signed Devo, and his name is Bob Krasnow, and he produced Strictly Personal, that great
yeah,
Captain Beefheart record.
My favorite.
But you know what, Captain Beefheart, I don't think they liked the mixing
because
on that.
Because he put a phase shifter on.
Yeah, he washed the fucking thing. I liked
it
that way.
I thought it was trippy. But, yeah.
Yeah.
I never heard the other one. I heard there's a version, a bootleg out somewhere without phase shifter.
Oh, the clean, whatever you call it. They didn't, yeah, maybe they just didn't like him messing with it without permission or something.
So what happens? You guys get signed?
Yeah, this is great. I mean, he's the guy who signed us to Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
And it was, I can't believe it. It was like back in the day, like each one of us signed a contract and like we were part of this thing for like, oh, right, for 2 years. And then we got dropped. They took the tour support out. We got completely dropped in the middle of a tour. But the guitar player, the way he was, he wouldn't want to tell. He didn't tell anybody.
Yeah,
he was one of those guys. Man, he was also. He eventually got a kidney transplant, but he also was on. He had to go to these medical centers to get dialysis.
Yeah.
So we'd have the itinerary
on tour.
So he'd have the itinerary for the gigs, also the itinerary for these medical centers. We have to wait in our van.
Yeah.
It's funny, we were signed to Warner Brothers, but we were like in a van. You know, it's not what you think. And
no, I was 14 years on Columbia, and I was in a van. I still am in a van.
Van.
It's all right. I like it's my van.
There you go. Yeah. But we thought, you know, this is the big deal now, Warner Brothers. But, we played in Italy. Oh, we played in Europe. Yeah, we did that for like a month. Yeah, then it was like when in 82 we stopped doing it. We just thought it wasn't like, didn't feel new anymore, you know, and then we started. It was pretty exciting. It really felt like this avant-garde thing, you know, playing like that, you know, in the late 70s.
Yeah.
And then, nowadays I like to tell people, when we moved here, I would tell people, like, I was in this band, you know, it was really cool and everything, but no one really gave a shit, you know, it didn't have any holding weight or anything. But now I tell people, because I just thought it was kind of a cool thing, you know. And
So what did you do after?
After that,
you're living out here.
I came out here. I thought, hey, maybe I can keep on playing because I was playing in like accompanying dance classes in D.C. on percussion and playing different people. But I thought if I come out here, maybe I'd be able to play more. And it was either here or New York, and we do everything ass backwards, my wife and I. So like we knew everyone in New York. We even applied for Manhattan Plaza, this subsidized apartment building where you pay hardly anything. So, but we still moved out here where we didn't know anyone. The first week we're out here, we got accepted to that Manhattan Plaza. But oh well, that's baseball.
Yeah.
So we just stayed out here, and then I kind of got absorbed with this troupe. Theater troupe called the Flying Karamazov Brothers. They're really funny. They do these different plays and stuff. And I was in the band, the circus band, and it's a brass band. The bass player played tuba, you know, so it's all horns and drums. And through that band, I got to be really great friends with Stephen Bernstein, who plays trumpet. He's in that band, Sex Mob, yeah. And he was in Lounge Lizards, and I got to keep being friends with him and Doug Weaselman, who's done really great stuff. And then through that, I got to play with Robin Holcomb, this great singer, and Bill Frisell was in the band. So before a lot of people knew who he was, it was like in the late 80s, early 90s. So it's like you're fish or something. You know, you swim around, you meet other people,
food
and it's
chain.
All the food chain. It's interesting, you know, to keep. I've always been into like any kind of a lot of different types of music. You know, definitely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, why not? You know, you can make it good. Except if the people are shitheads, you know, then it's hard to take.
Yeah, you served some time with Lou Reed.
Yeah. I was playing a lot, and still do, and still know her really well with Victoria Williams, and from yeah. Shreveport, Louisiana. She's been out here for a long time. She, when she was diagnosed with MS,
yeah.
they had this a benefit in New York for, it was at 120 minutes, that MTV show, where different people were playing her music. So Michael Penn, who I still know and play with, he said to me, why don't we go out there and be on this show? Because he got invited, and he said it doesn't. It's not gonna. Well, it won't pay.
It's
a benefit. It doesn't pay anything. There's nothing. It'll just give you a plane ticket out there. So I said fine. So I'll do that. And then we got in the hotel. The person at the registration desk, she hands me the key, and she goes, "Your key number is 1717. That's really good luck." Oh, okay, that's the end of my story. No, I said great. And then. The next day, we go to the, we go there to play, and you get to meet people. And I saw that Lou Reed was there, and then I got to play in his band, like back, play behind him. And then, I mean, because he didn't have a band,
okay.
He just had that guy, his main guy, Mike Rathke, the guy
yeah.
he plays. And then, so I played in that with him. And then for like the next 2 years. They'd call me up to be on Letterman or do a recording or do a show. It was always like really primo stuff. It was great until my father got really sick, and then I wanted to be with him. And then Lou Reed was getting ready to do that record in '96. What was it? It was called the Twilight Reeling something. And I said, yeah, I'm not going to be around for this. And I said, okay, so he'll just get somebody else who he's had since then. But I've seen him a few times, and I think I did do a tour with Vic opening up for Lou Reed,
yeah,
10 shows. But yeah, it was really cool playing with him. It was during the time when the Velvet Underground Live in Europe record came out, so when we would play on TV or shows, we would do the Velvet Underground stuff mostly.
Who was in the band?
In that band, it was Mike Rathke again, and
yeah.
and Lou, and me, and the bass player, it was either Greg Cohen or Rob Wasserman.
Oh, wow.
And
No, Fernando.
I don't think I've ever met him. But I know of him, yeah, for a long time.
He's on a lot of his stuff.
Yeah, Wasserman and Greg Cohen, they're very different than each other.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting. I've played with Wasserman since then with Ricky Lee Jones and Michael Penn. Yeah.
Mm. You never got Bilitch from Lou Reed.
I've heard all these stories, like crazy stuff, and I noticed that he would either be like your brother or I've seen him say stuff like to the crew people, like a Jay Leno, like 10 minutes before we're supposed to play, he screams at this crew guy through the microphone. He says, "What kind of microphone did I tell you to get me?" All of a sudden, he's like this complete monster guy. But in other times, it was like really fun, you know. And I don't know.
So what happened was you moved from like with this band thing to like kind of side mouse situation.
Pretty much, yeah. A different.
You never thought of having a Danny Franco band?
No, I mean, these records I do, it's a little bit like that, and I've played
yeah.
like that. You know, I've done solo things. I would like to do that. Sure, it'd be fun. I should look more into that. I mean, there could be a situation where there's a festival or something going on, and they would want the people on this record.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be totally fun.
But by playing with all these different situations and stuff, that must have been quite an education for you to bring your drum journey, different schools, different
right.
classrooms.
Yeah. That's true, and you really have to put up with a different... A lot of times, like, the leader may have, like, a certain... they may not be as open as, you know, like, they want something kind of straight, you know, and then you say, okay, well, this is what the conditions are, you know. And
how straight is straight?
There's one group where... I think the last thing I was in, it was very much like that. But no, the catering was excellent.
So and, they can service the lifestyle. You'll put up with the crimping in the art.
But I always feel like if there's like a good way to do it, the great way to do it, even if it's not the most avant-garde thing. Yeah. Did you ever? You've done a lot of different. I mean, you obviously have done a lot of different situations where you're not like the. The guy with the football, right?
The heave-ho. The coxswain.
But you do great. Oh, you do great
pole.
Stuff. Like
I've moused. With the mouse with the Stooges. It'll be 8 years in April.
Man, that is a great.
And
man,
I've
wow.
learned to take direction.
But the direction is like fantastic, right? It's like that great energy, you know. What's that?
It's from Egg.
The Iggster, the Iggulator, Jimmy.
He's different, kind of conductor. Great cat.
Wasn't he a drummer?
He was.
And he played left-handed. I think I saw some photographs of him.
He's a lefty.
Like left-handed on a right-handed kit?
He's a left-handed guy, though.
He's left, yeah.
And he let it be.
I'm too.
Switch over because, you know.
Right.
Where, like, Kenny's left-handed, but she thought, oh... The front hand's supposed to be the
I see what you mean. Yeah, like the more what
she thought
dominant
that's what it was supposed to be, so
yeah.
She ended up right-handing it. And
now she lives here too, right?
In the Valley, Studio City. I think maybe the Deep Purple guy played left-handed.
Oh, you're right, Ian Pace, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
Maybe he had a snare
lefty.
Still over there, but played left.
Weird.
I can't remember so well, but
left.
Left. Left. You got it. Yeah, I'm just curious.
Yeah. Right, side mouse.
Yeah, and then
the concept, then the plight of the side mouse.
When you make the records, and you're the meister.
Sometimes, when I complain to myself or to my wife or to a close friend. I'll say, like, this is why I like to do my own thing.
Yeah,
this is the time when I don't have to.
But you never put bands together to do gigs and tour. You just do it through recordings.
Yeah, not correct. And there's been some exceptions. Yeah, I've done a few things. I think for some. Oh, you know, there was a benefit for Joe Baezo, like, a long time ago. I put together this like, freak out jam thing. It was really fun. Yeah, it'd definitely be cool to do more of that stuff.
What drummer has been your biggest influence?
Definitely those guys that I studied with, Paul Motion and Jim Keltner.
Yeah.
I got to be friends with him. He recommended me for this really cool coffee table book called Sticks and Skins. It's like 500 different drummers. Because of him, I got to be in it, you know, and...
How'd you meet him? He's like do you know about him, Brother Matt? He's like the number one go-to guy, the call, first
but
call.
But you
guy.
Know what? But he plays different. That's what I love about it. You know, it's not, you know, Mr.
I know.
But
when it's
two
like
and four.
Mr. Producer gets the phone,
yeah.
First call man is Mr. Keltner. He's just.
And he started out with Gary Lewis and the Playboys. He started as a jazzer, too, like with Gabor Szabo, you know, and he's got that great feel and really different.
How'd you end up meeting?
Oh yeah, because Bring the Family, that John Hiatt record that he's on, the guy that produced it gave me Keltner's phone number. I mean, that's how I called him.
You want to take some lessons?
I really wanted to meet him.
And I was like, you know, here's the number of a drummer. Why don't you go?
Oh, so, yeah. Yeah, it's just but that's funny.
No, but here's his number. You want to meet him?
And Krasnow knew him. I think maybe back then too. Maybe I tried to get a hold of him, like when I was in a hotel room in Hollywood, you know, before I'd moved out here. He's been like really generous, like really great guy to talk to. Like, he'll talk like for hours. It goes into infinity, and not necessarily about drums, but like vitamins or like a tree that is outside of the woods. He's a really trippy, great guy.
He's from, amazing drummer.
Yeah. He's from Tulsa, but he's been out here for a long time.
Uh-huh. Wow.
He's definitely an influence. A lot of percussionists have been great influences. And definitely like people that aren't drummers. And Ginger Baker.
Oh.
I really like his.
Did you get to meet him?
No, I never got to meet him, or not yet. But I worked with Chris Goss recently, who, you know, did that Masters Reality record.
Right.
And that's what kind of made me feel like, yeah, I got to check him out again. His playing is just so like tribal and musical, you know. And he's a super
character.
We're
at the end of the first hour.
Ah, okay.
It's for the first hour of the February 15, 2011 Watt for Pedro show. Hold tight.
You got it.
Brother Matt and my guest, our guest, Danny Frankel.
Greetings.
Watt for Pedro show. February 15, 2011. It's the second hour of the Watt from Pedro show.
Hands up and wait and ring. Feel a fight, feel a sting. Hands up and wait and ring. Hurl, man, don't be.
From Pedro Show, we started the second hour off with Never Ending by Gallucci. They're a Sydney band. I was just in Australia, New Zealand. And their two brothers are good cats.
Is that where you met them?
Jake and Timothy Ben. Yeah.
Wow.
Last big day out I did. I've done three day outs, and the last one was in 2006. And
that was before actually, now, right? Like 2006?
2006 is probably before now.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Maybe 5 years.
Uh-huh.
Maybe. My math is good. And first one was 96, with Porno for Pyrus, but the second was 2006. Man. And the nickname of this festival is the Big Day Off, because you do seven gigs in 22 days. So those days off, and there was one in Sydney here, and these Gallucci brothers, they asked me to do a gig with them. Brother Steve McKay, too. In a Mexican cantina, well, kind of, it was Sydney, Australia, so Cantina Pacifica or something it was called, and I played with these guys, you know, did a gig with them,
with
guys.
Were there two guys?
They're
so
two
drums
brothers,
and guitar?
Jake, yeah.
And you did the,
one
yeah.
named Timothy Ben, they're good guys. And after that we heard Wedding Ring Hand Job by DMF, I think they're Orange County. And then Saint's Ability to Fall by Engine and the Rail. So this young man gave me his music. This was Saturday at that gig in Santa Monica. Me and Perk played with Brother Wayne Kramer.
All right. We
had him doing Stooges songs. Very interesting interpretation.
Brother Wayne.
But we just used it for springboards to start jamming out. And
yeah.
I thought he did good. Yeah.
It was fun.
Yeah, it was a trip.
Who all Kirk instrumental was, or?
No, I put some spiel on it, but we would just leave the song for him and go into Coach Ray.
Right. Wow. Go Perk.
And Perk was tearing it up. Perk was he played with a beanie on his head the whole time.
He's got to figure it out.
He's got to figure it out.
Yeah, he's strong.
You do beanie gigs?
Not yet.
No. Okay.
Were you saying like with a yarmulke?
Well, it wasn't a yarmulke, but the great grandson of yarmulke, you know, a beanie kind of thing.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, Perk knows those. Even Shlomo Pelko.
Is he a Hebraic
citizen?
You know
Shlomo Pelko? That's his name.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, Perk is beautiful, man. I mean, I love playing with him. Then we heard Lavender Eyes by 51717. But I think if you look at that upside down,
uh-oh.
It's Lalise.
Wow.
That's what I think. It might be a lady playing synthesizer or something. So back to the tale of yore.
Oh no, we were at young man Peter Edward Baker from Lewisham, South London.
Right,
AKA
right.
Ginger.
He had a very distinctive style, huh?
Yeah, and he comes from a real jazz thing, and he was.
That's maybe why.
I love that.
God, there's that one on.
He was already like 30 during Cream.
That sounds
Cream.
Just like Take Five on one of the records.
Well, he done some Five. Oh, well, Do What You Like.
Do What You Like.
Yeah,
I
love
Goodbye.
That. Yeah.
Goodbye, Cream. Right.
Or no, that's on Blind Fresh. Faith.
Is that Blind? That's where.
Yeah.
It is. That's
great solo. So
but,
melodic.
The riff is Take Five.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you listen to songs like White Room.
The intro
is
in
your love.
The intro is in
Five. They're bizarre kind of drum.
Yeah, really great.
Not your typical rock and roll.
Yeah, like a sunshine.
He gallops around on the toms a lot.
Yeah.
Sometimes just stomps, no backbeat.
Yeah.
Pow, pow, pow. I think that's White Room. There's not really a backbeat in it. Tom,
tom, tom, tom. Yeah, and a sunshine, he flips the beat around.
Sunshine and Love was strange, too, with the tom-tom.
Yeah, like that
pattern,
American Indian
kind
thing.
Kind of like a, I don't know, Native American
yeah.
or something. There was that, too, in, what's that Guess Who song? American Woman.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah,
I know
think
that.
About the drum part. It's not symmetrical. The lick is...
Oh, I see what you mean, yeah. Like, it'd be easy to hear the one in another place.
Yeah, for rock and roll, that's, you know, that's not the...
Yeah, it's unique.
Yeah. There was some strange stuff happening with some rock and roll interpretations, and I think Mr. Baker was way into that.
Yeah.
I guess he didn't get along with the bass man so much. I think they were in a band before where they didn't get along.
That's what it was, yeah. I think it was a band called Graham Bond Organization.
That's right.
And Ginger had fired Jack. And then later for Cream, when Eric and Ginger got together and talking about a bass player, and they thought of Jack, and then Ginger went over to Jack's house, and he was like that kind of a kook. You know, he hired him again.
But it only lasted like 2 years.
Yeah, Cream only lasted for like 2 years.
A little
yeah.
bit, but they were very yeah. profound on the whole thing. And
Badge, that
Badge.
Tune. Yeah, many
right.
songs.
Angelico Misterioso, George Harrison.
Exactly, yeah, that credit.
Guitar.
Oh, yeah, yeah the beginning of the bridge, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely his sound. Man. And
But that's Goodbye, Cream.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Disraeli Gears and
yeah.
Wheels of Fire. Perfect. Wheels of Fire was mind-blowing because one of them was live. And they did a Robert Johnson
right.
song called Crossroads.
Yeah.
And the bass, I mean, he just rolls over ding, Clapton. Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, they rocked
when
it.
When they get into that end part, wow, he's just like, I never heard a bass player like that. Well, I couldn't hear many bass guys on the records.
Jack
I could hear James Jamerson. I could hear it in R&B.
Wow, yeah.
But rock and roll, they like on a Creedence record, I can hear yeah. it now, but when I was young, I couldn't tell what was going on. But I could hear Mr. Bruce, I could hear Mr. Entwistle, I could hear it on Who Records.
Now, Bruce,
what do you think
of
that drummer?
Of Keith Moon? Yeah. Oh, yeah, I saw the Who recently, Atlantic City Casino, and Zach Starkey was playing. That was really great. It was really cool.
Did you ever see Keith?
But yeah, but going back to Keith, no, I never saw him live.
Yeah,
I've talked to some people. Yeah, you saw him?
He was at the Forum. It's quite a feat.
Forum. Keith Moon, wow.
But, yeah.
I felt like he played to the singer, you know, to the
hardly
lyrics.
Any time, but the bass guy had great time.
Yeah, he held it down. Keith played a lot of the, like, crazy fills with the cymbals, like, in the middle of the fill.
Yeah, no hi-hat.
I
think he left it open.
Yeah.
Real
washed out.
Yeah, and but have you ever heard the demos Townsend did, where he would play the drums himself?
No, I haven't heard any of
yeah,
that.
Yeah, stuff like, you know, iconic Mooney stuff, and you hear him with this. Like, whoa. And you could tell how Moon just lit the songs up when he came in. Same with the bass, too.
Keith Moon.
Both those guys, that rhythm section.
Complete nut, too, his lifestyle, like throwing TVs out of the windows.
He ends up 32.
Yeah.
He dies at 32.
Whoa.
Yeah. Terrible. Terrible, but I mean, he was some kind of rock and roll drum. That's how George Hurley wanted to play drums.
Oh,
he was
really?
Making his own surfboards up here by the high school.
George Hurley?
Yeah. And he went to Hawaii twice. He's living on the beach and shit, eating coconuts and starving to death. And the waves almost wiped him out, you know. So he said, fuck this surfing shit. I want to learn drums. Mm-hmm. What he did, he got that Happy Jack record, you know.
Yeah.
And he did with headphones and just played the Keith Moon. That's how I learned.
That was like their Sgt. Pepper's record, wasn't it? Didn't it come out around that time?
No, it's a little earlier. I think it's their first album.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, I think it's before My Generation.
Oh, wait, maybe it's Tommy's second.
My Generation's first. But Who Sings Tommy. My Generation, I think it was called. And then the next one was Happy Jack.
Okay, yeah.
Maybe it was that. But it's one of the early ones.
Right.
The one around Sgt. Pepper's, I think, the one that Petra did the a cappella version.
The Who Sell Out. That was your idea, wasn't it?
Yeah, she didn't know who they were. She grew up in a jazz house, you know.
Yeah.
So I gave her an 8-track.
Oh, Charlie.
And a cassette 8-track, and I put the album on the track 8. And I said, now you fill these other 7 up, just singing into it. This is me and Dee Boone's favorite Who albums.
Yeah, that was cool. And the cover, she aped the cover, too, didn't she?
Oh, yeah, she went and put it out, but it was just something to do. You know? She was with the Victorias a lot, I think, during that time.
Yeah, right.
It was just indulging. I just wanted to hear her do it because we loved that record with the boys.
Yeah, I saw her do that at the John Hanson Ford Theater. Ah. That outdoor place, yeah. It's pretty silly.
Oh, with her choir.
With her choir, yeah.
She's an incredible musician. She's been on the show a few times.
She has?
Mm-hmm.
Petra. Character.
She's got a band now with Yuka Honda called If By Yes.
Oh, great. Yeah, I think my friend Doug played with them. Yuka C. Honda, right? Yeah, that's what she calls herself now.
Mrs. Yuka C. Honda.
Yeah, Petra plays on one of these tracks.
I think they were just
tracks.
Here. She's also a member of the Nels Klein Singers.
Yeah.
Right. And they got a new bass guy, Trevor Dunn. Because Devin
Hoff. Yeah, he's been in Chicago, and I think he wants to move here. I'm not sure.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, hard living in Chicago. Good music scene, though.
Yeah, I love that town a lot.
But he's an incredible bass player. He wants to do a duo album with me.
Oh, wow.
The Emma Goldman Bust Out Brigade. That's what I want to call it.
What a trip. Wait, what did you say?
The Emma Goldman Bust Out Brigade. And speaking of busting out, we're going to bust out now with Brother Matt.
Cool. Give a little quick shout out to Chicago, too, because there's a lot of Minutemen fans gathering there for this Sunday.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, they're going to go
off. Girls Rock benefit or something.
Yeah, yeah. So I wish I was going to be there. Nell's going to be there.
Much, Brother Matt.
That was fucking fun.
Yeah. What was your inspiration?
Well, I started off having no clue. So we were talking about yucca, and I had a yucca disc sitting right in front of me, so I figured we'd start there and then just see what happens.
Infinity.
Yeah.
That was fun.
Thank you very much, Danny.
Yeah, thank you.
And, helping out with the spin cycle.
Yeah.
Spin cycle.
Sounds out of those things.
Yeah.
Yeah, the spin cycle, Brother Matt does his trip, and he's got guests that are musically inclined. We invite them to jump on board.
Yeah, cool. Who else has jumped in?
Nels did it.
Oh, really? Very cool.
Mishizuka did it with the synthesizer.
Ah, oh, man, too much.
Perk did it on drum. Joe Boone, D-Boone's brother. Flea did it.
Yeah?
Yeah. Who was scared? We had somebody on who has never done improvising.
He wasn't. It bummed him out. He wasn't into it.
Miss Lara.
Right.
She's an incredible musician, but where she plays, they don't improvise.
Oh, right, so she didn't know how to relate.
She could play every instrument, and she was like kind of deer in the headlight, right?
Yeah.
It's a little scary. She got into it, but I remember her just kind of...
Oh, you know,
she was feeling very awkward about it.
It's the best when you just get lost in it, and then you keep on adding things, you know, that then, yeah, but otherwise, it's
a pants shitter.
Yeah, Doug, watch you. You'd sit back, listen for a minute, and then just jump right in with the...
Yeah, there's Brother Matt.
Brother Matt.
I didn't have your mic up there, Brother Matt. Sorry about that.
Oh, well. They heard me before.
Wow.
He had to mime.
Same dude.
He had to mime it out. But, some folks are intimidated a little bit, but most get into it.
Nels must have rocked it.
Oh, man. His sponges, spatula.
Guitar.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and this little backpacker guitar you play.
Yeah.
A whisk.
A trip. And, let's see, my old poop man cleaner friend.
Who?
Tony Platten. He has never played with other musicians, never had a band, only just had a guitar. So he
just wails. Eddie Van Halen wails constant.
It didn't matter like what goes on.
It was great.
Hell yeah. Hello, Guitar Center. That's cool.
Yeah. So there's been many different kinds of approaches.
Love it.
To it.
Yeah.
But the common thread, of course, is Brother Matt.
Totally fun. It's cool. And like you play, and then you stop and just let it take on its own thing. You know, then jump into it again. You know, no need to. play constantly.
Right, yeah, yeah. Sit
because
back.
It's moving, yeah.
You could deal with the latency.
Yeah, I could. Yeah, after a while, yeah, it felt fine.
Just get to add more flavor.
Flavor. I think it's the best.
Okay, head call. Maybe it's a good time for some spoken word.
Cool.
Psalm 3. How long the nights of my pain, Lord, and short the days of my joy? Why does darkness shroud my soul at noon, and light stop at my doorway? Is it my knees you want me to bend? Is it my will you would have me surrender? I bow to no man, so how can I surrender to you? You talk of mercy, but I dispense judgments. You talk of love, but I must live in strength. You talk of forgiveness, yet must I be ready to defend. I deal with my tormentors as they would me. Better I should not hear your voice when all you say drives me mad, and all I can do is scream at the darkened sun, shine, shine, and thaw the frozen marrow of my bones, O Lord, O Lord. How short the days of my joy, how long the nights of my despair.
Homeboy's lost in rhyme and data tossed inside him, adding cost and finding meaning from the outside in. Well, what gets heard? Hey, that's the word. But what gets failed is something else. Ruptured structures them days, upward puncture these days. Pump the sump, sure, wail away the juncture from then to day. Hollywood, but couldn't, though I could, but wouldn't. Put me with Madonna, find me a turbo wailed sonata. Figured I could marry every dictionary, find the truth that's buried in the suit we carry. Give and go, I follow up. Whistle blows, we're lined up. Homeboy throws his best up. I choke and fuck lay up.
It is easy. It is easy to believe that we're still in the Middle Ages. Watch what happens when the electricity goes off. But the idea of a holiday celebration in Detroit is to burn down their houses. It's encouraged to hate rather than love, unless it is a so-called love that is obsessive, dependent, jealous, and life-destroying. It's encouraged to believe that smoking cigarettes and dreaming of dying like Sylvia Plath is sexually attractive. It's encouraged to believe that ignorance is cool and that being greedy is being shrewd. It is not encouraged to look for the unchanging history of nature that we falsely believe we are separate from. It is not encouraged to follow the trail of consciousness until we become the serpent swallowing our own tail. It's encouraged to strive toward insanity and death in a culture that thinks God is patriotic, that can't tell sentimentality from emotion, and confuses misery and depression with art.
Watt from Pedro Show. Heard some spoken word there. This was from something Harvey Kubernick got together, but I don't think ever came out. It was called Hollyword. And we heard Psalm 3 by Hubert Selby Jr. He's probably better known as a writer.
Yeah.
Last Exit in Brooklyn?
Yeah.
Yeah. Then we heard what Watt gets heard, and that's me doing a spiel. I ended up using that for Pharaoh's song. And then It Is Easy by Ethan James. The late, great Ethan James. Did you ever know him? He ran a studio in Venice called Venice, California. Called Radio Tokyo.
Yes, I never met him. I've heard all about that.
That's where we did Double Nickels on the Dime.
Oh, wait, did he play Hurdy-Gurdy?
He did.
I saw that guy once. I remember him, yeah.
Yeah. He started playing Hurdy-Gurdy. No, actually, he started down here, but
did
then he moved up there, and he sometimes was a feature soloist of their Philharmonic and stuff.
Yeah, I remember
he got really
guy.
Good at it. And liver cancer took him.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Is it, like liver cancer from, like, hard living, like drinking and drugs? Yeah. I mean, okay.
Wherever you get it.
Yeah,
it
is from somewhere. Wow. Yeah, I liked him.
Anyway, Ethan was a beautiful man. For a while there, he was the fourth member of Blue Cheer. He was the keyboard guy.
Oh, man.
Well, when he was known as Ralph Kellogg. But he was a beautiful man, and I worked a lot with him. He did the first two Dose albums. No, first three.
Oh, cool.
And he did the first two Pharaoh's albums. He did a bunch of Minutemen. Yeah, he was a good guy. Really good cat.
And cheers to Harvey Kubernick, too. He's like a spoken word god.
Yeah,
guy
he's still
like
around.
So committed
still
to
around.
Doing that stuff.
We came to the end of the second hour of the February 15, 2011 Wafa Pedro Show. Hold tight for hour three. February 15, 2011. It's the third hour of the Wafa Pedro Show. And here comes part four of Jack Flanders' adventure. Brand new. Steam Dreamers of Inverness, part four.
Jack, Mojo, and Claudine are each having a different experience within that room they call Steam Dreams. There is an old cast iron slide projector that operates on steam. The photographic images are three-dimensional, black and white, created by shadows and light and misty particles of steam. Projected in the center of the room is a city, with figures from an era long past. At the edge of the city, Jack discovered what appears to be the original Inverness mansion that once existed in Scotland. Hovering over the city is a huge zeppelin, and within the zeppelin is Mojo. He stands in the lounge, listening to the voices, but no one is moving. The passengers appear frozen in time. Or are they? He stands perfectly still, barely breathing. And sure enough, suddenly, a head turns, a hand gestures, a cigarette touches a woman's lips, there's a puff of smoke, and then they freeze.
Man, that's like stop motion. Can I get in sync with that? When they move, I'll move. When they stop, I'll stop. Ah, they gave another little twitch. Another one. That wasn't a jerk, it was more like a jolt. Like they hopped ahead a few frames. Yeah. They're becoming more frequent, almost like spasms. There's something to be said for syncing yourself up to your surroundings. You begin to see things you never would have seen before. Yeah, people are jerking forward now. There's a little like a flipbook. All those still frames slowly flicking past. If it gets going fast enough, I'll be in a moving picture. Did I see a cloud dibble by the outside of the window? Man, I think we're moving. I don't know, but maybe we're going somewhere.
Is it really you, Colette?
Yes. In my world, I am real.
Why did you go away?
You listened to them, and you no longer believed.
And one day, you were gone.
No, I was there, but your world had closed your eyes.
And now, you are grown up.
You too, Claudine.
I missed you.
We can be together now.
How?
Trust me.
Meanwhile, Mojo has been watching the woman in the red dress. She is smoking a cigarette that's been inserted into a cigarette holder that's at least a foot long. She has the appearance of someone who is rich and terribly bored.
Excuse me, ma'am.
Who are you?
I'm the piano man.
I thought they had a player piano.
They do. That's me.
Well, what do you want?
I
want
to know where we're going.
They not tell you.
I just got on board back there and I didn't think to ask.
What does it matter? You are here to piano play.
It'd still be nice to know where we're going to end up.
Do we ever end up anywhere?
Well, you got a point there, but are we flying in circles?
If we flew around the world, would you say, why do we fly in circles?
I never thought of it like that.
Perhaps we fly to the ends of the earth and then back, eh?
That's more like what I figured.
You, a strange man. Where are you come from?
Oh, Philadelphia.
Ugh, no wonder.
And where do you come from?
From here. Where else?
I don't think you were born on this, Zeppelin.
You, get me drink.
And what would you like?
Martini.
Dry?
Of course.
If I get her a martini, I think I better get myself one, too. Man, this is getting weird.
Meanwhile, inside the tower, or is it inside Jack's mind? Well, whatever.
There are tall cylindrical shapes out there. What are they? Whatever they are, they're not moving. Of course, nothing moves here. Are they trunks of trees, or are they pillars? Oh, it's like a living Parthenon. The tops of the trees form a canopy. The trunks are as smooth as marble. There's a light coming from deep within. How far back does it go? What are those things? They're sculptures. Carvings of strange creatures. They look like mythological beasts. Monsters from legends and folklore and fantasy. Wow. This one resembles a phoenix. This one, a griffin. What's this? A four-legged creature with wings and an eagle's head. And here's what I believe is called a hippocamp. Front half horse and back half fish. And a gorgon. A gargoyle. And a Medusa. How'd you like to be married to her, Jack? What imagination people had back then. Or is it my imagination? What if all these creatures are inside of me? I've met a few before. Maybe the time has come to meet the others. I sure hope not.
Claudine, there is nothing here.
You can't see this.
Of course I can. But this voice you hear, whoever you're talking to, none of it is real.
Why does it need to be real?
I'm sorry, Claudine, but it's the steam and the heat. You're hallucinating.
Sanford, you give it time, they'll come to you.
Even Mojo can see what this is.
What do you mean?
He called this the Cabinet of Ultimate Illusions.
So? Our lives are illusions, are they not?
Do you seek truth in illusion?
Yes, of course, we all do. Where else is there to look?
Your order, sir?
I'd like a couple of martinis. Dry.
You see that woman right over there?
Put it on her tab.
While he's shaking up the drinks, I'm going to look out the window and see if they're going anywhere. I don't know if it's gotten cloudy or is everything getting fuzzy. Everything is going out of focus. Oh, damn. I was looking forward to that martini.
Are these sculptures melting? Are they just made out of wax? Everything is dissolving. I'm losing it. Oh, shoot.
I thought we'd put enough coal in there to last us all night. I'm going to check out that old steam projector.
Jack, what time is it?
Well, we've been here for about 2 hours now.
Is that possible? But nothing happened. I accomplished nothing.
What did you expect to happen, Claudine?
I felt I was getting close to something.
Yeah, same here.
Can we please leave? This room is stifling. My clothes are soaked with sweat.
We didn't run out of steam. That projector shut itself down.
The next day, Jack and Claudine are up and about, enjoying the early afternoon on the patio.
So, Claudine, what did Sanford think of our little steam adventure?
He didn't like it.
I didn't think he would.
No, he just wouldn't let himself go.
Well, he's used to being in control of himself. And probably everyone else around him, too.
Oh, good morning, Mojo.
Good morning. I thought it was afternoon.
Well, who knows anymore?
Have you seen Sanford? Is he okay?
I haven't seen him.
What's the book? Are you back to reading the Bible?
This? No. I was reading about the Buddha. You know, once a man came up to him and spat in his face.
No.
Oh, yeah. Spat right in his face.
What a terrible thing to do.
The Buddha's closest disciple was Ananda. And he was so angry, he asked the Buddha for permission to trash the guy.
What did the Buddha do?
Well, he just wiped his face and said to the man, "Thank you, sir."
No. Come on, really?
Yeah. He told the man, "You created a situation where I could see whether I could still be angry or not. And I'm not angry. And that makes me very happy."
Amazing.
The Buddha said, "You have also created a situation for Ananda. Now he can see that he can still be angry. We are both very grateful." And then the Buddha added, "So whenever you have the urge to spit on somebody, you can come to us."
Well, how did the man respond to
that? He was shocked. He was trying to get the Buddha angry. So that night, the man couldn't sleep. He kept seeing the Buddha sitting there calmly, wiping the spit off his face and saying, "Thank you, sir." It kept playing over and over in his head.
Well, you know, he deserved it.
So early the next morning, the man went back, fell down at the feet of the Buddha, and asked forgiveness. The Buddha said, "Forget it."
Really?
"There's no need to ask for forgiveness," the Buddha said, "for something that has passed."
So the Buddha forgave the man?
No.
He didn't?
No, he wouldn't forgive him.
Come on.
The Buddha said, "I cannot forgive you because I wasn't angry with you. If I had been, I could have forgiven you. But if you really need forgiveness, ask Ananda. Fall at his feet. He will love it."
What a Buddha.
Oh, yeah.
Later that afternoon, Sanford White joins the group.
"Good afternoon, everyone."
"You slept well, Sanford?"
"Oh, yes. This country air is excellent."
"We were wondering what you thought of our steamoscopic dream machine."
"Do you want my honest opinion?"
"Of course."
"I believe you are mesmerized. Claudine, you told me it was addictive, yes?"
"I don't know. Is it?"
"I think you should destroy it before it destroys you."
"Oh, come on."
"It's taken over your life. It's become your life."
"Sanford, there's so much more to discover."
"Yes. It's like an exploration into your own imagination."
"Oh, well, so why is that bad?"
"Because you are addicted to it."
"I hear what you're saying, but there are things going on in there that's not the stuff I could come up with on my own."
"There was a reason that the room was sealed up and kept secret. Obviously, Dr. Mazzulla knew about it. But did he ever tell you?"
"There were a lot of things Mazzulla never told anyone."
"I think if you did some research into the early days of Inverness, you may find an interesting history of insanity."
"I have to admit, this is a pretty nutty place."
"Man, I've seen things here that I still don't believe."
"Sanford, are you saying we should seal the room back up?"
"Well, I believe that your steam cabinet of ultimate self-delusions was created by someone who was more than a magician. He was an alchemist. And as you know, alchemy has a long history of insanity."
"Look, we're aware of the dangers."
"We know it may be addictive."
"Yeah.
And like any drug, it can give you a glimpse of God, but it won't give you God."
"And the price you'll pay for that glimpse, is it worth it?"
"Yes, it is. If you know when to quit."
"And when is that?"
"Well, I'm all for quitting now."
"Oh, no, Jack, not yet. There's someone who is waiting for me."
"You're right. I don't know what it is, but there's something maybe waiting for me, too."
"Well, I may have a martini waiting for me."
"Oh, it's like trying to reason with opium addicts."
"It could be worse."
"Oh?
You ever try reasoning with a speed freak?"
"Actually, I have." "I think you are all quite mad, but I'm afraid I'll have to include myself, too."
"Look, I'll tell you what. Let's do one more dream, okay? Then we'll call it quits. Now, how's that?"
"That's cool."
"Just one?"
"I think Sanford here is seeing this more clearly than we are."
"Thank you, Jack."
We know there's something perhaps a little more dangerous than we can recognize.
I don't feel any danger.
So tonight is the last time, okay? Let's meet here at 8.
Sanford, are you coming with us?
I will, but I will not participate.
That's okay. We can use an independent observer.
Well, I'll get that old fire breather stoked up and ready to go.
You need a hand?
No. I need the exercise. I'm beginning to build up some muscle here.
It's early evening. Down in the cellar, the furnace is roaring away. Our explorers prepare for their final adventure into that land of steamy dreams.
Have you seen Sanford?
He said he was going for a walk.
Well, it's after 8.
Well, he knows the way, and he wasn't going to be involved anyway.
And you want to be free to do your own exploring.
Yeah, so? So what?
Well, fine. I just meant to ask you, who did you meet in your steam dream?
A friend from childhood.
Oh, really?
Well, I was the only one who could see her.
An invisible friend?
Yes. And now we're both grown up.
Have you been talking about old times?
I'll tell you later. I'll leave a note for Sanford.
I wanted to say that you were right about him. He's okay.
And now you trust him, huh, Jack?
I think I do.
Oh, it took long enough.
Sometimes it takes what it takes.
And sometimes you are impossible.
And once again, back inside the steam room, the trio takes their places.
Man, I want to get back up there with Mr. Zeppi.
And I want to talk to my friend.
I'm going back up into that tower.
So now, let the dreams begin.
And there it is, the fourth tower, waiting for me.
Come on down here, Zeppi. I'm coming back on board.
I'm here. I'm ready. I'm waiting. I'm yours.
And once again, Mojo is standing in the lounge of the great Zeppelin. And as before, everyone is perfectly still. He can hear their voices, but they are like ghosts or spirits, captured by this strange photographic device.
If I stand still, just stay cool like before. Maybe I'll get back in sync with them. If they twitch, I'll twitch. If they scratch themselves, I'll scratch myself.
And so he waits, and as before, suddenly a head turns, a hand gestures, a cigar is lit.
They're coming alive again. Well, maybe not alive, but lively.
Someone bows. And Mojo bows too.
The woman in red is still standing there. She's smoking a cigarette. She's blowing smoke in little jerky puffs. I better check on those drinks. How are those two martinis coming?
Here you are.
Thanks. I gotta taste this. Just like I figured. No taste. It's not even wet. Excuse me? I have your drink.
Thank you.
Sorry it took so long.
I needed this.
You can taste it.
You cannot taste?
Mine is so dry, it's not even wet.
How you say cheers?
Cheers. You know, I think I can taste it a little.
Good. We'll finish. We'll have another.
And back within the tower, Jack finds himself once again among the forest of trees with trunks as smooth as marble pillars.
These sculptures of mythical beasts have changed. They're much more detailed. They don't seem worn down by time and the elements as they did before. It's as though they were just carved last night. They're so fresh, so vibrant. They're almost alive. Uh-oh. I wonder, will they become alive? Well, I've come this far. I may as well keep going. There's a strange light coming from deep within. It's too tempting not to continue.
And back in this strange Victorian city, Claudine is waiting for someone.
Claudine,
I can hear you.
What do you want?
I want to know why you are here now.
Why did you know me before?
I don't know. Maybe because I was alone. I needed a friend.
Here, take my hand. Can you feel my hand?
Yes, I think I do.
Will you trust me?
I'll try.
I have so much to show you.
Is there anything here to eat?
Are you hungry?
I just want to see if I can taste anything.
You like caviar? The finest caviar is sturgeon roe from the Caspian Sea.
Can't say I ever tried that.
Here. Open mouth. That's it. Ah, there. You no like?
I can't tell.
Oh, that's too bad.
I'm just getting my taste here. You got something with a little more zest.
Spicy?
They got any jalapenos?
Pepper? I don't know. Oh, here, try this.
What's that?
Truffles. Open wide.
I'm getting some texture.
No taste?
Maybe a little. You know, the longer I stay here, it's all becoming more solid.
I know.
Did that happen to you? Is that why you are here?
For some, yes. For me, no.
Is this place going to become so real that where I come from isn't going to seem real anymore?
Don't let that bother you.
Well, I am beginning to like it here.
Then stay and play. Come, sit down, piano man. Pray for me, please.
Okay, I can do that.
Changing. I'm going through the full spectrum of colors. I feel like I'm on a journey into my subconscious mind, going deeper and deeper into something that my own wishful thinking is making real. It's like this place is reaching into my psyche and pulling forth images and shaping a reality around it. Is the Lotus Jukebox, the source of it all. But I don't believe it. Not for an instant. Well, okay. Maybe for an instant I'll believe it. But that's it.
Jack walks up to the jukebox with its celestial lights constantly changing colors. He places his hand on the warm, friendly, and, in a way, almost benevolent, even compassionate, glowing machine.
Yeah, it feels solid, all right. But I know there's nothing here. If life really is a dream, what difference does it make, whether I'm here or whether I'm back there? Huh? What songs do we have listed on here? Dreams of Rio. Really? Dreams of India. Dreams of Bali. Dreams of Sumatra. Dreams of the Blue Morpho. They're all my dreams. Yeah. I should have known. What I've been searching for all these years, is inside myself. I knew that, but I kept looking outside. What was that? Something's happening. The jukebox, it's cracking. It's shattering into pieces.
The pillars are splintering. Everything is falling down around me. On top of me. Weak.
The Zeppelin is breaking apart. Hey, lady, do you know what's happening?
Take my hand. Don't be afraid.
Are we going to relive the Hindenburg? Damn.
It's all right. Stay here with me.
Oh, man, I think this is the end.
The city. What is happening to it?
Oh, don't leave me, Claudine.
I can't see you. I can't see anything.
Please, don't leave me.
Mojo, what's going on?
I don't know. There's steam everywhere.
What the heck is that?
It's Sanford. He's bashing the projector with a sledgehammer.
I knew it. I knew I shouldn't have trusted him.
Hey, Sanford, stop that.
One day you'll thank me.
Well, that's not today, man.
He's gone wacko. Claudine. Hey, Claudine, you okay?
I'm finished. Oh, yeah, uh-oh. Looks like he finished it already.
Hey,
cast iron.
Wake up.
They made things
come on.
Collapse.
Come back.
Well, that's the last.
Thank you.
I was right.
I needed that.
Man,
nice to see you back with your humor intact.
What happened?
Oh, I trust you.
Sanford took a sledge to our steam projector.
He did? Why?
So that one day we'll thank him.
What?
Yeah, I know.
And later, having shut down the furnace, Jack, Mojo, Claudine, and Sanford White gather together in the patio as the sun slowly rises above the misty hills of Inverness.
More coffee, Jack?
Yes, please. It's good coffee.
Thank you.
You seem very pleased with yourself, Sanford.
One day, you will all be thanking me.
Maybe forgiven, but I don't know about thanking.
All of you were mesmerized by that infernal machine. You never would have stopped. Not until it sucked away your very soul.
Oh, come on. That's ridiculous.
Perhaps. But would you have quit on your own?
Actually, yes. I saw it for what it is. Or what it was.
But what was it? Who were those people? Mojo, do you know?
I'm still trying to figure that out.
Well, some of them may have just been people like ourselves that just preferred to be there.
Is that possible?
I have no idea.
Life was pretty sweet there. I was just getting a taste for it.
And it was getting a taste for you.
Oh, Sanford, they weren't vampires.
Were they not ghosts?
Well, I don't think so, no.
I guess it's back to watching TV at night, huh?
I'm tired. I'm going to bed.
Yeah, well, I'm ready to turn in, too.
I'm leaving.
Are you leaving right now?
I am.
Well, you don't have to go. I'm certain there are other things here you can find to take a sledge to.
What I did was necessary.
Oh, yeah, right.
Sounds like your limousine is arriving.
Jack, Claudine, Mojo, I appreciated your hospitality.
Oh, Sanford, go home.
Yeah, get lost.
One day, you may want to thank me.
But that's not today.
Once again, it's evening in the old Inverness estate. The mist is forming in the valley below. Mojo and Claudine are sitting outside, looking extremely bored.
Oh, man. Maybe it's time I go home, too.
Why so soon?
Because there is nothing more to do.
Well, you can look at the stars.
It's all cloudy tonight. Ah, there you are.
You know what?
No. What?
I had old Art look at our poor smashed-up steam dream machine.
Sanford really beat that thing up.
Yeah. But it was only the cast iron casing, not the internal mechanism that got smashed.
But there were pieces all over the floor.
I know. But old Art looked it over, and he said...
Yeah, it's a shame. But it's nothing that old King Cole can't weld back together again.
Really?
Yeah, That's what he said.
Maybe I'll get a taste of that caviar after all.
Maybe.
Do you really think so?
We can all dream, can't we?
Juan from Pedro Show. You just heard part four of Steam Dreamers of Inverness, brought to you by the good folks at ZBS Media. You can go visit them at zbs.org. Mr. Meatball Fulton, much respect to you for your wild and creative, righteous, intense mind. And sending Jack on those travels with Mojo and all that. Mr. Danny will get to experience, right? Because you're going to tell your buddies right away that you're up on the latest edition of the Live from Pedro Show.
You got it.
Okay. I'm glad you dug Brother Matt's Zen Cycle. Now,
yeah, it was totally fun.
Getting back to your drumming journey, soul journey.
Yeah.
So you went from band life to side mouse life. Just from some accidental meetings of peoples.
Right, exactly.
You never planned on doing that, right?
Right, yeah. And I was just kind of open to doing different things.
You come out to California, it just balls out.
There's one band I was in with a citizen named Dean Chamberlain.
Ah!
It was way back.
Code Blue?
Yeah, he was in that. And this band is called Skin. God, it was way back. And that was before I met up with those new vaudevillian people, Flying Karamazov Brothers. That definitely was like a band, you know, where we'd rehearse like a few times a week and
I play the Madame Wands. With,
did you really?
There was a gig for a benefit, and it was Randy California,
oh, right,
Dallas Taylor, and Ray Manzanera.
Dallas Taylor, wow.
He was the drummer. He brought him in a Porsche.
The Lord took him away, Dallas, right? I think he's not around.
Yeah. And Randy, too. Randy died saving his son from a riptide.
He's surfing. I read about that. Yeah. Man.
Yeah. And anyway, Dean, maybe it was his practice pattern he ran or something, but one whole bulkhead was mirrors. And they started jamming out them mirrors. Watt turned around.
Watt turned around.
I guess that wasn't practice. That was rehearsal.
Watt turned around, but quick.
Yeah, real quick.
Now, this was on Lillian Way, I bet, right? Off of Santa Monica.
Oh,
right?
Shit, it was.
And Vine.
It was.
Yeah, that was his place.
Okay, so it was his dad. So you remember the mirrored bulkhead?
I remember that. Yeah, okay. I remember that.
Did you face it?
I set up saw it at a 90-degree angle. No, I was facing the mirrors.
Did you hurt your eyes?
Was a mirror like a weird Velcro thing?
No, this was fucking mirrors. I remember I could see everybody, and everybody was like in it.
Oh, in their rock.
I was like, whoa, better turn them out here. Right. Oh, Peter Case was there, too.
Oh,
all
yeah.
Good. They're all nice people. Now.
Yeah, right.
And
yeah, that definitely felt like a band. Because, yeah, I mean, it had... Not to mock anyone, but it had that tension, which I think we're talking about, which I think is strength.
Verbs.
Yeah, it can strengthen the band. Like when people like, have like, you know, like this tight clenched fist, bad, weird, competitive things.
Yeah.
That can strengthen a band. You know, like how Cream had that.
Yeah, right.
Or I guess like maybe every band in one way or another. Actually, the band with the Flying Karamazov Brothers, that felt like a band.
Yeah.
The Kamikaze Ground Crew, that's what we're called.
Yeah, and you guys were like kind of the audio part of the act.
Yeah, we do stuff on stage,
you'd have
too.
You do stuff cool. To probably coordinate with their acrobatics.
Yeah, there's funny...
kind of vaudeville. Comedian.
Definitely, yeah, the new vaudeville kind of thing. And get this, we rehearsed, we memorized.
He's got Perkins beanie on.
Yeah.
He does? Maybe this is his.
Hey, Kamikaze Ground.
No, his had like a patch. His had like a patch on the front, and it said something like.
Like.
Hardcore. Wicked hardcore, wicked pisser.
Oh, yeah, I haven't run into that guy in a long time.
Yeah.
I saw that at a benefit for Petra. At the knitting factory in Hollywood, he was playing.
Yeah,
Yeah, my wife organized that. Yeah, that was a pretty cool benefit. Yeah, it was for Petra when she got hit by that car.
Sure, I remember. Broke her leg.
Yeah.
She's in a crosswalk, too.
Yeah.
Yep, in Venice.
Big Venice, yeah.
Yeah. That was the last time I saw Sir Perk, yeah.
Oh, man. That was a little while ago.
That was, actually.
Now he's got a son.
Oh, he does?
Yeah, named Eden. Wow. And he's got drumsticks. So he's starting to get the
young
Ponderosa. The Ponderoni. Oh, big respect to Perk. He was in trying 10 years. Finally came through. Okay. What happened with the Dean machine?
Oh, yeah, what happened was... there were just too many conflicts with this thing
the
fly
strengthening thing.
With the what?
The
with the vaudevillian.
But with the code, or Dean, no more strengthening from differences. It was weakening.
You mean like?
Well, you said opposite things kind of make stronger.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, that and just there was like conflicts with schedule, so it's better. Yeah, if it's
okay. Yeah. Scissors.
Yeah, but I run into some of those people every once in a while.
Yeah, that's why you gotta be a nice person, because you never know.
You run into people.
Karma. Monitors. They're the karma monitors.
This friend of mine once said...
I want to give you this.
Okay.
What is it? It's a U.S. version. It comes out
March 1st. Oh, great, okay.
Raymond did the cover there.
Who's
that's
on
my
this?
Third opera. Tom Watson, Raul Morales.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Raul Pedro Guy. Tom Manhattan
Beach.
Great.
Can you play some of this?
It's one big song.
Okay.
So you got to listen to it all.
Yeah.
In your thing. It's one big song in 30 parts.
Uh-huh.
But you want to play some music. Now, I've played some of this Jupiter stuff.
You have. I know. I think you liked that Youth Hostel on Jupiter.
Yeah, I played a few of them. Let's play something off of it, and you also wanted to play some Cream. Yeah, let's play some Danny Frankel informed tunage. Thank you.
Thank you. with a running scream. Orchard in pale blue. A man holds a hall that the sun hasn't hit on a day.
Juan from Pedro Show. Just heard a chunk of music selected by our guest, Mr. Danny Frankel.
Greetings.
Started off with Avenue Shalom Lachem by Diaspora Hollywood.
Right. Featuring Stephen Bernstein.
Yes, right. Mr. Zorn, of course, put it together,
yep.
Right? What's this? Tadzik? Is that his label?
Yeah, well, how do you say it? Zadik? Or
Zadik?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oy vey.
My pop said I would fuck up a two-car cracker. Sorry.
There you go.
Then we heard The Birdcage by Mr. Danny Frankel himself on one of his recordings where he gets to liberate himself from the trials and tribulations of being the side mouse.
The side mouse, yes.
Side mouse is great, too. You can't learn everything being the boss, so it's good.
Yeah.
Life's about taking turns.
Yeah.
I know about that, too. And then we heard something from the Great Cream Power Trio, that defined Power Trio. We're Going Wrong. And finally, Primavera by Robin Holcomb. And tell me something about the last one. I know about the other three.
With the Robin Holcomb thing?
Yeah. I don't know. This first time for me.
Yes, she's married to Wayne Horvitz, who was in that band Naked City.
Yeah.
With the Zorn and Frizzell and really Joey Barron. Yeah, interesting stuff. Genre hopping, that's what they would call their music. Like, be like 3 seconds of speed metal and like biker blues and some classical thing. And like LA TV jazz.
Yeah, yeah.
Really wacky.
Scott Joplin.
Yeah.
Tom Scott. Who is that?
Tom Scott. Oh,
the. See, the sax guy that did all those 70s.
Oh, right, yeah.
In fact, there's a. Was it Baker Gervitz Army? There was a Ginger Baker proj. I think he was jamming on.
Is that right?
Something like that. My 70s memory is addled. But anyway. And so Robin Hall. Mr. Frizzell.
Yeah, Frizzell was an exciting.
An unknown before, Bill Frizzell.
Yeah, it was before people knew of him. And yeah, this is a pretty cool tune.
Yeah, he's been bitching to have you aboard.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it's really
fun.
Come
down.
Big respect.
F-U-N. You're
an incredible drummer and percussion. Thanks. And just righteous cat. And it's really an honor for us to have you on the
show. And thanks, likewise.
Okay.
I love this town, too.
We want to have you back because you've probably got more spiel. You can turn both me and Brother Matt and the listeners on.
Cool.
Okay.
And so likewise, too.
Again, and another throwdown with the spin cycle.
Cool. Throw it down.
Cool.
Okay. So it's
2011.
Brother Matt, too, thank you for your always essential aiding and abetting.
Indeed.
Pleasure.
From the Love Grotto on the Pleasure Point. It's been February 15th, 2011, Watt for Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry. Yeah.